3, 2, 1. Good enough.
We got it out. It sounded perfect to me.
I think it's
we'll figure it out. It's at least close enough for government work.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've listened to earlier episodes, but we don't really have theme music as such. We don't splice anything in. What Ron and I do is we play When the Saints Come Marching In on mouth horns. And so you are welcome to join us on the mouth horns, or you can just wait until we are finished and then we can get started. All right, so Ron, are you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 15, season 1, week 14 of City Saint Country Saint. Good week. We took out the Carolina Panthers, who are technically also an NFL team, 28-6. Putting us right in the thick of the wild card race, because everyone in the NFC is 6-7. Ron, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I feel like the dumbest fish in the world with a hook in my mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm getting drugged to the bank. Right. I know I'm going to get slaughtered. I'm not even fighting. Yeah. So let's do it.
That's right. I did not actually give you a proper introduction. This is my co-host, my stalwart friend, my the yin to my yang, Elron Mexico. That is right. I mean, this whole season is an exercise in Godfather 3 of getting pulled back in when we very much would rather think we're out. It's very funny. Have you looked at the standings?
I know, like, everybody's
NFC standings
6-7, right? Everybody's 6-7.
Everyone's
6-7.
Except the Panthers. We have the two teams at the top of the NFC East. We have the Detroit Lions, and we have Minnesota, who's 7-6 because they beat the Raiders 3-0, which is just infuriating. But then there are, I think, literally 6 teams who are 6-7. The three of us, the Packers. Who else? Who am I forgetting?
What's the Commanders?
I feel like there are three in our division. I don't know. But it feels like Seattle is 6-7.
Green Bay? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I said them. So that's 5. I guess there are 5 teams, right, plus Minnesota, who is spiritually 6-7. and we lose every tiebreaker. except for the fact that if we win out and go 10-6. Oh, the Rams are also 6-7.
Yeah.
I knew there were 16. So if we win out, we will actually win the division because we still have games against Tampa and Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here to talk with us is someone who inconceivably is envious of our position.
Envious is maybe understating things.
Yeah. So representing the Carolina Panthers, is a new friend of mine from Blue Sky. Welcome to the podcast, George Parks. George, how
Thanks,
are you?
Thanks, man. Blue Sky's got the juice.
It does.
I mean, I think if I'm getting invited on podcasts because of stuff that's happening on Blue Sky, I feel like you have to admit it's got the juice. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I hope so. It needs to take over. Twitter got to die. Like, Elon Musk, or one of them, either Twitter or Elon Musk has to die. So yeah. I hope Blue Sky is the next thing that puts it, you know, does it away with it. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so here's the thing. It's still invite only. They've got an invite list. They're planning on opening it up when they federate and sort of open the protocol up later this year, early in 2024. I don't know. Maybe it'll take off. Maybe it won't. All I know is it's not like a fascist website at this point. Yeah. It's got its faults, but it's not that. So yeah. I spend my time there. I was really big on Twitter. I spent almost 10 years on Twitter, really posting every day, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And nah, not for me anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
I can't break myself of it completely because I know too many people and it still has group chats. But other than that, it really does feel like less urgent, and I'm getting better about getting away. We talked about this a little before we got on the air, but just social media in general right now is kind of in doldrums because it is just a depression fire hose.
Yeah.
And I don't love it.
You get two things you get that just spray you with depression. Like, you get fights over economic data and vibes of econ sentiment related to presidential polling for an election that's still 10 months away.
Yeah.
And then you get, obviously, Israel-Palestine stuff, yeah, which is totally different in terms of why it's depressing. But
in the middle of that, you'll get, like, a cute cat photo and then, like, a child's body parts and then, like, a funny tweet, you know? And it's like, this is not how I should be processing a genocide, like, in between all this random stuff. And it's like, there's got to be a, like, and it's just, I feel powerless, too, because I can only, like they say, you can only watch these horrors. You know, and like Elon Musk makes money from it.
And then Twitter just has someone with the name, like, get him in the oven, telling me what anti-Semitism is. And so I'm not, like, yeah. I refuse to process that as actual reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then on the other topic, I mean, I spend my day job is understanding econ and finance and a little bit of geopolitics, stuff like that, as it relates to markets. And so I spend a lot of time looking at economic data and having people being like, oh, well, the only thing that matters is like my lived experience. It's just like, y'all, we've kind of been through this thing called the Enlightenment, and like there's this perspective called materialism, and like it's a whole thing, and like, can we not do this again? But, you know, it's the fight that gets had, so here we are.
I
can't blame anyone that doesn't spend any time on social media anymore, is what I would say, regardless of what site you're not spending time on.
Right. I think the debate, such as you could call it a debate, between statistics and lived experience is that they are such different conversations that when they meet, it is essentially talking past each other in both directions. Like, it does matter for certain aspects of how things like the Fed or whatever should respond. You know, they have to respond to something somewhat data-driven, or else it's kind of corrupt. But by the same token, what you have are a lot of political actors who have a much more vested interest, and voters have a vested interest in them seeming like they have a vested interest in caring what people's perceptions are, even if they're wrong to some extent. Like, there's a kind of political necessity to be responsive to, you know, I don't know, vibes, a sense of collapse, precarity, whatever it is. They just happen to be very different conversations. And everyone's riding the same bus. And so they yell at each other on that bus when they come across each other. And both think the other is somehow, to some extent, stupid or naive. But it's two different languages being spoken, I think.
There's also a class of political actor that's much smaller scale that has a vested interest in talking down current incumbent political actors. I think that gets understated as well. I mean, there are very earnest people out there who are just like, I'm not having a good time, man. And like, fair enough, you know, rent going up a lot, prices that you reference every day going up a lot and not coming back down. Like, that sucks. Even if I have a chart that shows you, median income's up much more than inflation and low end wage income's up a lot more than that. Well, that's not really cold comfort to how the human brain works. So I get that. But then there's also people who are leveraging essentially that argument in ways that are self-satisfying and self-serving. And I think it's just tough. Like, politics is tough. It turns us all into animals because it's an animalistic it's an animalistic process. You know, it's exercising power over other people, right. And both what's going on in that discourse and elsewhere. I mean, it's just it turns what should be a pretty lighthearted activity of having fun with your friends online into another post from whoever. Like, do I have to read this? Yeah. So yeah. But at least we have football teams to be enthusiastic about.
My friend.
Yeah.
And yet, all of that is somehow less depressing than the Panthers.
Yes, much so. Much less so.
Are you a native Carolinian?
No, I have spent most of my adult life now in North Carolina. I moved here when I was 18. I did college in the Carolinas, and then I spent 4 years in New York, and I've been in North Carolina since 2016.
So I just know from us talking to each other that you went to Carolina to play football at Duke.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. So I was a walk-on. I wasn't recruited. I just got into the school.
Oh, that's pretty cool, though. Did you end up getting on the field a material amount?
Depends how you define material. There is actually a New Orleans connection here. I got in for 3 snaps in garbage time when we were up big against Tulane my senior year. So
nice.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Tulane and the great city of New Orleans, for that experience. I appreciate you.
That absolutely counts. And what snaps did you get in for, and what position were you playing?
Well, I played tight end. I mean, like, literally we were just running out the clock with a minute left or whatever. So it was like 3 quick run play kind of things. I graded out at 50%, which wasn't spectacular, but considering I'd never actually taken a snap in a live game before.
Wait, you whiffed? You were on the field for 3 plays and you whiffed an assignment on one of them?
Well, my position coach was a tough grader. So, you know, let's just... But yeah, it wasn't spectacular.
Mercy. Who was the head coach when you were there? Is that the Cutcliffe era?
It was, yeah. So his first year was my first year. And when I actually got into the school, I literally called the football program and said, hey, can I walk on? And I called like a month after they showed up for the job, because I called in like February or March of 2008, and Cutcliffe had been hired, I think, a month before that. And so they didn't really get back to me until the middle of the summer. But then they said, like, yeah, if you, or not middle of summer, like June maybe, if you show up, you can be on the team. If you can make through camp, you can be on the team. Because, like, you know, I'm like 6'3", 230 pound, you know, kid coming out of high school. There just weren't that many dudes that were willing to do that at that body type and were able to get into the school academically. Right. Like the walk-on program is just, it's just tough. And now schools like Duke, I mean, Duke especially, but schools like that have much more developed walk-on programs. So now I wouldn't be able to do the same thing.
Yeah. But at the time, Cutcliffe turned that program into like a real program, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
He got them to their first bowl in like forever. If I remember.
Yeah. So we actually went, we played Johnny Football in Atlanta for, I think it was the Chick-fil-A Bowl at the time in Atlanta's Dome. I mean, that was, I think, the year or 2 years after I left. After I graduated, and just an amazing experience. We lost that game, but it was down to the last, I think, 2 or 3 snaps, very close, super competitive game, you know. And then this year, I mean, you know, Cutcliffe never was able to sort of get him over the hill. He got him like halfway up, and then this ground kind of came out under his feet, and he just wasn't able to make it happen. But the Elko era, the last 2 years, Coach Elko did an incredible job. So, you know, we'll see where things go from here. But it's an ACC football program. It's a real program.
So who was your team growing up?
My dad was a huge Cowboys fan. So his teams were like the Cowboys, the Patriots, and I think I can't remember the other one. He had 3 NFL teams he kind of cared about. He was a Cowboys guy.
Right? Where was this?
I lived in British Columbia growing up. So he was like, he was Canadian. My mom was American, but he loved American football. So, like, you know, I grew up watching Monday Night Football and, you know, watching games on Sundays a whole bit. That's one of the reasons I came down to the States, is because of those childhood memories of football. And, yeah, so when I was growing up, it was like the heart of the Michael Vick era in Atlanta. So, like, the Falcons were my squad. We were in the Seattle media market. So got a lot of Seattle games, which I hated. You know how NFL broadcast rules work. But Atlanta was who I cared about, just because Michael Vick was so dynamic and it was such a fun team to watch. Work done and all them. So, yeah. But then, you know, when you play college football, it's real hard to be, it's hard to care that much about the NFL when it's your day job, right? Like, you know, some guys do, but I just, I had too much else going on. So I fell out of watching the NFL for a long time. And then when I was living in New York, I mean, you can't be a Jets or a Giants fan if you're not from New York. It just feels wrong. Like, I don't, and there are people that are, and I'm sure people will get mad at me saying that, but, like, it just doesn't feel right. Like, yeah. I don't know. So,
and why would you punish yourself by rooting for those teams anyway? Like, they're terrible. Like, it's
seriously. Not a good time. Yeah, just to hear Mike Francesa go on the radio for 3 hours on a Monday morning talking about how terrible your team is, and you're not even from there. Like, God, just no way. So, you know, I was really happy to see Daniel Jones find success with the Giants. We didn't overlap at Duke, but we were very close in terms of our times there. So always love to see a Duke kid do well. So then, but when we moved to North Carolina in 2016 and said, okay, we're going to be in North Carolina long term. So, okay, I'll root for the Panthers, even though I don't have a history with them. But this is where I live now. This is my home now. So they're my squad.
Do you go to a lot of games?
I don't. I've only ever been to one. They're so expensive, man. They're so expensive. Yeah. And I just, here's the other thing. We have an 11-month-old daughter, and the idea of spending 6 hours at an NFL stadium, tailgating all that stuff, I just, dude, who has the time? Yeah. I go to a lot of Charlotte FC games. I follow Charlotte FC very closely. I'm in a supporters group. I love the stadium for Charlotte FC games. They're a blast. It's a, you know, soccer is so much more digestible. You can find that time once a week to go to the stadium for a few hours, but it's also a lot cheaper per game. So that's that side of the Tepperverse.
That must break the hearts. That must break the hearts of all the Whitecaps fans back home.
Seriously, right? I mean, it's honestly unbelievable they can even support an MLS team in Vancouver. I mean, it's
why?
Just...
Why? How many people are in Vancouver?
Well, Vancouver is big, but just the Canucks suck all the oxygen out of the room, right? Like,
I guess this year may be a little different, but I'm buddies with Stefan Heck, and usually he would just stop at the Canucks suck because he finds it so depressing.
Man, people growing up, people don't care for them. No, they don't. Yeah, it's a religion up there. It doesn't matter. And it's the same in Toronto and Calgary. It doesn't matter if their team is good or not. That's where your money's going. That's where your attention's going.
Right.
Right. If I had a second team, maybe it'd be the Whitecaps, but I got my MLS team.
So what brought you back to North Carolina?
My wife, well, now wife, then girlfriend, was going to law school. So I said to my bosses, hey, can I work remotely? And they said, sure. And been here since.
Nice.
And I, you know, going to college here, I really loved it. I love the weather. I love the people. I love the just vibe here. It's so much more relaxing and so much more suited to, I think, how I go through life than either where I grew up or New York, which both very different environments. But in any event, we're super happy to be here. It's great. We bought a house in Charlotte when we moved here from Winston-Salem in 2019, and we'll be here as long as I can see into the future.
That's great.
So,
Ron, any thoughts, directions, anything been kicking around your head?
I went to Chattanooga. I almost went to North Carolina, but it was too far of a drive. I never really got, everybody says go see the, I always go west. The mountains are nice, though. Like, I went up there. They're not as big as the mountains out west, but it's very peaceful. I see why people stay up there. You know, it was beautiful. Yeah, what's Asheville like? Is that worth checking out? Everybody tells me to go see Asheville.
People love Asheville. I mean, if you like breweries, if you like, you know, that kind of laid back mountain kind of vibe, you will like Asheville. Asheville is cool. Now, I will say, like, I grew up in a town that was like Asheville, but a tenth the size and like way more hippie and way more concentrated. So for me, I kind of like, I go to Asheville and I kind of get like a little twitchy, like this, something's off here. Yeah. But I'm sure that's how a lot of people feel about like a lot of stuff I like that, you know, or grew up in that. You know, I'm sure people that grew up, you know, down the shore or whatever, when they go to Charleston feel the same way, right? Whereas we love going to Charleston. So, you know, it's, but yeah, it's very, very laid back, very, like lots of cool stuff to do. So many good hikes, so many breweries to hang out at. Food scene is excellent. You could do like maybe not a week, but you could do a good 3 days in Asheville and not get bored.
Yeah. The thing about Asheville is despite my, rabble rousing online, I am kind of dispositionally bougie. And so Asheville is kind of perfect in that sense. It's like a town with a lot of money. And because it's a town with a lot of money, there's just like a lot of stuff for people who can spend some money. And so it's like, it's got cool shops and restaurants and breweries and the whole thing. But there is nothing grimy or grungy about Asheville, from what I've experienced. So it also just feels a little weird.
Yeah. There's a Disneyland kind of quality to it.
Yeah, because I'm just so... And I mean, it's like where the, you know, the Biltmore Estate is, which is just like this white elephant of... Why is that Carnegie? Am I blanking on who owned it?
Vanderbilt,
no. Biltmore. Vanderbilt, thank you. Vanderbilt owned this big estate, which was kind of a white elephant to maintain, and is now basically a monument to how capitalism needs to be destroyed. Because it's gorgeous, but one person owned it. Yeah. And you're like, there's no way that should happen ever.
Yeah, Gilded Age too, not Roaring Twenties, which a lot of our monuments to the excesses of capitalism are 20th century inventions. This was not. This is a Gilded Age thing, which is, you know, makes it even more interesting.
But it is gorgeous, you know, but it's like, I can't believe I'm paying $30 to get in to see this guy's house.
Yeah.
But it really is. It's maintained really well and like historic.
It's an American chateau, which is like, you know, if you go to France, like there are chateaux that are like this, that are privately owned historical attractions or cultural attractions that you sometimes pay, sometimes not, but like they're privately owned, but they're open to the public and they're all over the place. Like if you go to the Loire Valley, there's like every other building is one of these things. Here, we don't really have that kind of concept. We've got public parks, you know, public historical monuments, that sort of thing, but we don't really have that sort of weird, like private for posterity, but it's public access, but it's someone owns it or someone maybe even lives here. That's what it is. It's an American chateau. At an American scale too, like huge.
All I'm saying is that every year one descendant should be brought back to the grounds to be executed.
Minimum. Yeah.
Drawn by lot, maybe, or how are we deciding which one?
That's exactly
whoever
right.
did the worst
exactly
posts
right.
that year.
The Shirley Jackson Memorial bloodletting. I'm trying to just make this maximally uncomfortable for you, George.
I got a dumb question about mountain towns. Like, I ain't been to a lot, but does it seem like the richer people live higher up the mountain and everybody else, kind of normal folks, lives in the valley part down below?
So I grew up in a mountain town, and that is absolutely how my mountain town worked. I can't speak for all mountain towns, but
like
where
I
live.
Everyone I go to is like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like,
and it's like a cartoon. The rich people empty their garbage out the window and it just tumbles down into the valley.
Well, part of it too is a lot of mountain towns are around a ski hill, right? So like if you're down low, maybe you're not close to the lifts or maybe you're not like on the ski runs, but like up higher, like you're maybe skiing in, skiing out of wherever you're living. Like, so that's part of it too. But yeah, no, that's definitely a thing. Asheville's kind of weird in the sense that like if you go a little ways outside of Asheville, it's actually not super wealthy. It's Appalachia. I mean, it's, you know, now it's not as bad as it was one day, especially with all the growth that's happened in Asheville proper, but it's not like Vail or somewhere like that, right? It's a little bit more nuanced than that, I would say.
So how closely do you follow? I mean, you have an 11-month-old, so let's put that aside because that changes your entire schedule of everything. But how closely do you follow the Panthers usually?
I would say
say that they were a 7-10 team. And you did not have a child absorbing all of your energy and time.
I still wouldn't be super attentive, to be honest. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, I would consider myself a Panthers fan, but in the mildest sense of that term, fan, right? Like, I am not some guy who's out here, like, my whole mind, body, and spirit is dedicated to the Panthers. Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Right. All right. All right, that kind of sucks some of the air out of getting your ass but we're going
to
do that.
You feel free to get my ass nonetheless, because the fact that I'm even associating my team with this, my name with this team at all means, you know, I'm gettable.
Ron, you want to intro this?
Yes, all right, sure. I always forget how to do it every time. Yeah, I'll just start talking about the segment. Charm, yeah. All right, all right. All right, folks. Welcome to our segment, In the Dome. And today, me and Charles have a very special guest. He was in the stadium. He had his eyes on the field. He was feeling the vibes. He had his finger in the air to know which way the wind blows. He's here to tell us what happened. You know him. You love him. Welcome, Skooks. Skooks, how's it going?
What's happening, y'all?
All good, Skooks. Welcome to City Saint, Country Saint. Glad to have you back. Was it nice to not be losing within the first 5 minutes of the game?
Yeah, it was nice to not be losing, but it did not feel exactly like we were winning. So it's only half nice, I guess. It was an interesting vibe that, you know, before the game, the Saints inducted Jabari Greer into the Saints Hall of Fame.
Right.
And so he got out on the field and made a really nice speech to everyone.
Oh, good.
He said that, you know, when he was looking to join the Saints as a free agent, he had a vision of himself as a child playing playground football. And it was a moment that sparked his memory, and it really kind of like filled his heart. And he knew that if he came to New Orleans, he would be loved and he would have a special relationship with the fans here. And everyone like was crying and cheering and loved him. They just loved him. And then he also came out on the field to do, you know, most Saints fans know at the beginning of the game, a player or a guest will come onto the field and signal the beginning of the Who Dat chant pregame. And Jabari was there, very enthusiastic, and it was just a love fest. And then he left the field, and onto the field came Derek Carr. And it was a different relationship.
The only way to have the Jabari Greer energy match the Derek Carr energy is if he signed off by saying Darren Sharper innocent.
Yeah.
No, I was very happy to see him. I liked Jabari Greer. And those were good teams, and that was fun. And I also, Derek Carr has to appreciate Blake Groupie taking some of the heat off
of him. That first series where they, you know, they got in the red zone again, and then again failed to do anything, and then again missed a field goal. And it felt like everybody was, we wanted to be happy. We didn't know how we were going to feel. And then, it's going to be one of those days. Yeah. And then it proceeded to be one of those days.
Yeah. It's funny going from one to the other. I mean, Crocodile Punty did not do a good job of holding. And then I didn't even think he did a very good job of punting. And we are certainly giving him a lot of practice punting. I don't even remember his real name anymore. I've just gotten to the point where I just call him Crocodile Punty in my head. But he didn't hold it well. Groupie slipped and shanked it. And even without hearing, because I don't watch with audio, I could tell that the stadium was just enraged.
Oh, yeah. It was booing again. And it was... It's more, it's like this feeling of kind of like hopelessness or helplessness at this point. You know, nobody wants it to be like this, but it's happening like this. And that feeling persisted throughout the, you know, entirety of the first half and really well into the fourth quarter. I don't think the Saints really pulled away until like what was like maybe 8 minutes left in the game when they finally threw the touchdown to Olave, and then it was over at that point. But until then, like, there was just like this, like, why are we hanging around watching this? It was bad.
Right. Like the blocked punt was exciting.
Oh yeah.
But it was one play in what was otherwise a 7-3 half. Our offense did nothing. Derek Carr ran through for under 120 yards for the game.
Yeah, and then there were like there was a point in the game where everyone was just begging. Well, I was like begging both teams just to stop throwing the ball. like Carr had like again into the fourth quarter, he had like 30 something yards passing. And Young wasn't doing any better. He doesn't scare you at all. There was just there was never a feeling that, Carolina had the ball. We'd have to something explosive might happen. It was just they're just going to plod around, and neither team could do anything when they threw the ball. So it just seemed kind of pointless. A lot of the game felt like that.
I've never felt like in a quote unquote blowout. It was like it was really ugly. It never felt like it. I never felt good about it, even just on TV, But were the boos for Carr like stronger this week than they were last week, or about the same? Or
they were worse last week than they were this week, because I think there's just this feeling of resignation.
Oh, fuck.
And especially after having lost last week, it just felt like the stakes aren't. Mm-hmm. People didn't know if this means anything anymore.
Yeah.
Turns out it might still. So.
Right.
So we still have to keep going back.
I also think the booing will always be a little suppressed by having the lead.
Yeah.
If we go down against the Giants and he misses a couple of passes in a row, it's going to be bad. Like, I think people are going to really lose their shit if it goes awry against the Giants. It better not, man. I've watched that guy play.
It's not gotten any there's been fallout from it like last week and this week, where just the discussion amongst fans and with the press is just everyone kind of understands now that this is all this guy is ever going to be, and the relationship between him and the fans is kind of strained at this point. If you watch him in his like weekly press conferences, he doesn't seem like. He is a very confident person. He has the affect of someone who is just constantly trying to like think of what to say or like how to play the role or whatever. And he's like a big kid, and it's just not inspiring people very much. And I think a lot of people are ready to move on, and it's just been 1 year with him. So,
great. What's the deal with Michael Thomas? Is he like on the injured list? Or is he complete? Because he's not listed on the injury report.
I thought he was on IR, but I don't know the actual answer to that. But
he is on IR, I believe.
High ankle sprain. No.
Oh, right. Shit. Because Olave hasn't practiced this week with an ankle injury. Kendre Miller is still out an ankle injury. And Isaiah Foskey, instead of being a healthy scratch, appears to have an injury. But at least Shahid is back practicing. He's on limited practice, but I think that means he's going to play. And Taysom is back practicing.
Okay.
So that should brighten everything up a little.
It looks like Michael Thomas is out at least until week 15. So maybe we get him. Maybe we get him the last two games of the season.
Okay. Well, this is week 15, so maybe we get him back next week. So they get the touchdown. They go up on the punt. They go up 14-3, and then they kind of start to pull away. Did people? Like really get behind them, or was it kind of tepid? Because you're like, well, I mean, it's the Panther.
Well, it was relief mostly, but also one of the things that really helped was Jimmy Graham scored a touchdown.
And
as we all have noted that Jimmy Graham is pretty much the team mascot this year.
Yeah,
barely appeared, but when he does appear, it does lift everyone's spirits to a great degree. So that helped, and people. We're relieved and glad that they won. So it wasn't like It didn't feel bad leaving the dome. I will say it felt easy leaving the dome because it had cleared out significantly by the time we were leaving. So
that's no good.
This is like week 6 or 7 for the home games now, and we're only now figuring out the little tricks to, like, to we go down this stairwell and not down that escalator, and then we'd escape the bottleneck of the crowd getting out.
Kind of depressing that the trick is wait until the end.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's, Right. But yeah, so all in all, not a bad day, you know, ennui that everybody has right now. But it's still good because of the comedy of the NFC South, which, you know, I'm the kind of person who enjoys this. I like everybody kind of being a failure and and still scrapping at it. It's very interesting. So I'm extremely confident in this train wreck. So we'll see how it goes.
I mean, look, our last 4 games, 5-8, 6-7, 6-7, 6-7. So it's going to be a bloodbath one way or another. A bunch of mediocre teams slap fighting their way to the finish line.
Was there a lot of Panthers fans in the dome?
You know, that's the difference. No, there weren't a lot of Panthers fans. I mean, you can imagine a 1-11 team isn't really going to travel that well, especially for people who maybe when they travel, they have come to New Orleans once or twice and it's not a big deal to them. I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of Giants fans this week. I know historically they travel well, and I've been in the dome where there's a lot of Giants fans, even when the Saints are doing well and people are interested in it. So I got the feeling that if the Lions fans crowded this out, I think the Giants fans might do something similar. So we'll see.
Well, send them home, man. Send them home mad and depressed.
It's funny.
And with a venereal disease.
Yeah, okay.
I'm still mad at Giants fans for being real jerks in the first post-Katrina year when, or I guess it was the second post-Katrina year because we blew them out in New York, but they got salty when the game got out of hand, and it even got noted in the press how gross they were.
they were, that was when we had to play we had to play a home game in Giants Stadium. Was that two?
I think that with the year we played the home game in Giants Stadium, they were just, you know, the Saints were just bad. Like the first post-Katrina year, they were very bad. And then the second post-Katrina year, they made that, like, completely unexpected Drew Brees' first year run to the NFC Championship game. And so it was that year that I was at the game.
Mm-hmm.
When we were bad, I don't think they were as rude. It's when we were good that they started being like, well, at least I have a house.
Jesus,
and I was like, man.
There was a lot of that going on for a while. So, you know, people.
But you get to hate them forever.
That's how time Sure.
Yeah. It was also unoriginal, too. They were all saying the same shit, you know?
Yep. Why? Nothing about public corruption. Come on, guys.
Leave our city alone. We're the ones who beat the crap out of our city. We know what's going on here.
Nobody does it like
us. You hear this amateur shit.
So are people enthusiastic for the end of the year? Is the city like, you have to make the playoffs now? Like, you're at 6-7, but the whole NFC is a trash fire. If you can't make the playoffs this year, there needs to be a change.
I mean, that's the, so there, you got two camps now. You've got the people who think, well, they should just tank the rest of the year and blow up the whole thing and move on. And then you have people who probably a little bit more reasonable, you know, want to enjoy the football games they have remaining to watch and then worry about tomorrow.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I like to think that's more of an earnest football fan's way of approaching things. Like, we don't need to be nerds about it. Like, let's just hope we can win and watch something interesting happen this year. But we'll see.
Yeah. I can't watch for draft position.
No.
If my mind had switched to the point where losing is the better outcome, I can't commit 3 hours of my life to watching where I get mad because they're playing poorly. And then I get even madder if they play poorly but win anyway.
And then the other thing is you've got division opponents on the schedule, especially you know, they're finishing the year against the Falcons, and they've already lost to them once, and you don't want to get swept by Atlanta no matter what the records are. So that's enough to keep people invested, I would hope.
Right, and you can't get swept by Tampa, and you can't lose to Tommy Cutlet. Mm.
And the Rams, we got to pay the Rams back for them, you know, the no call.
That's right. We will bring Nickel Roby Coleman to the field and crucify him on the logo.
Let's do it.
Come back next week after the Giants game?
Yeah, sure.
Cool.
All right. Thank you so much, Skooks, our man in the dome. Boom, 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 boom. So that seems like as good a time as any, now that we're in the spirit, to actually get your ass. If you had won this game, George, if the Panthers had won, this would have been your opportunity to open both barrels at us. But, alas, 28-6, and the Panthers fall deeper into a hole, and we get to be the people getting your ass. So, Ron, do you want to get started in getting George's ass?
I could say a couple of things. I appreciated the Panthers. Like, I still think of them as an expansion team, and they really played like it. And I felt really good to see they right true to their roots like that. That was what it was like. This is the first quarterback I've ever seen probably this year that was absolutely worse than Derek Carr. He was like you build a quarterback in a video game, but you use all like the little points on like just having a sweet face, you know, instead of like accuracy and all that. You know? And I think it's dumb too, like to say like I want to see like you know like the worst NFL team play like you know Alabama or something like because that's stupid. Like you know these guys are pros, you know. But honestly, I kind of want to see the Panthers play like South Dakota Tech just to see what would happen. All right. I'll stop.
I just thought it was very interesting that a team could run for 400 yards. I think it was actually 200 yards, but 400 effectively, and score 6 points because every pass that was not thrown to Adam Thielen was thrown like a discus. You know? Just no real, just it just has to land between the lines, and that's acceptable. The idea of precision just was not part of the equation. Literally 13 completions for 137 yards out of 36 attempts. Now, I can't go too deep there because Derek Carr threw for 119 yards. So it's not like this was, like this game was like played in leather helmets somehow. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard for me to actually picture a team with such an ineffective passing game when it really did not seem like we were putting a ton of pressure on the quarterback. So I am relishing how bad the Panthers are right now because it really does not look like there is much hope for the future either. Is that it? Should we consider that the end of getting his ass?
My ass was gone. I'm going to get our ass. But honestly, this hurt probably both teams to just watch like Andy Dalton like wasting away on the Panthers bench. Cause like gotta think. I want him back. Y'all probably want him to start. You know, like it just kind of hurt to see like that was probably the best quarterback, and he was just sitting there.
This was interesting for me because I got to watch the Saints play, and there are people who played who I have never heard of. There is a guy on our team named Heflin who played on the defensive line, whose first name I do not know. Mm-hmm. There are two people who were healthy scratches, a linebacker named Rice, apparently, and a defensive tackle named Mustafa. Really? Like, they're just making people up now. And yeah. I don't know what happened to our players.
Mustafa?
Yeah, there's a guy named P. Mustafa, which just sounds like he's like a Jellicle.
Yeah, I'm buying that jersey. I want a Mustafa jersey.
Shit. I, you know, like, I'm looking back over my notes from this game, and I just, like, I've got, in all caps, bolded, running from the shotgun should be illegal. Like, it's, I have never seen a team, and this is what's so depressing about being a Panthers fan right now, is, like, forget who's running the plays, who's actually on the field. You've got a team running with, like, 11 personnel, so, like, one tight end, one running back, three wide receivers. Everyone close into the line, to the bunched up. So, you know, two wide receivers split close in, wide receiver tight end on the other side, running back. Out of the shotgun on short yardage. Why? In the NFL, where every guy on the defensive side of the ball is an absolute freak, and all they got to do is get their shoulder into a tiny hole. This team, man, it's like they don't want to win, but they've already traded away the number one overall pick. It's in possession of the Chicago Bears.
Wait, who did you get for that pick?
Who do you think we got for that pick?
Is it Bryce Young?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
There's layers to how horrible team is and how horrible they're being run. And it's not just like, oh, the players are bad. Well, yeah, kind of, yeah. But, like, you know, we can make fun of Bryce Young all day. He's a rookie doing stuff that the three of us, you know, crusty white guys could never do. But, dang, like, it's the way the team's being run that really kills you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very Saints move, actually.
Yeah, we feel like
the Saints seem to have a first-round pick every other year because we love to trade up from the 37th pick to the 28th pick. Like, that's how we got Ingram. That's how we got Davenport. Just not caring about high picks in the future at all to target one dubious selection.
And I do think, like Young, for a guy with the team he has around him, like, he had some accuracy issues in that game, but, like, I didn't see, like, an obviously terrible quarterback that's never going to make it in the NFL. You know, like I don't know. I'm not the world's greatest evaluator of quarterbacking talent, but I'd like to think that if you're making the right reads, which he was making the right reads a lot of the time, and you're taking care of the football, which he was, right? He wasn't throwing the ball into double coverage. He wasn't putting it at huge risk when he, you know, tucked it to run. If you're doing those things, then the accuracy issues you can probably work on, right? He's clearly a decent athlete. So I don't want to write the kid off as a rookie, but you're sure making it hard on him, right? To be in there, and having Andy Dalton there to sort of walk him through some stuff on the sidelines is probably pretty helpful. But you're making it awfully hard for him to develop into a real NFL quarterback with the situations you're putting him in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a theme that's come up a lot, you know, whether people find the right place. You know, like, the Saints could have taken Lamar Jackson. The Saints, had the Chiefs not traded up, would have taken Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And both of those guys would have been taken while the fading Drew Brees was still the man. And that might not have been great for their development. The Saints may have managed to fuck up those, like, sort of singular talents. And by the same token, C.J. Stroud is having a great rookie year under D'Amico Ryans and found himself really in the right place, though now Tank Dell is hurt too, so that's going to, like, really hurt their offense going forward. But, you know, you get lucky or you don't get lucky, and you wonder if Bryce Young is just gotten incredibly unlucky to land where he is and may need, like, to be saved, like, to have it all come together with a different franchise after the shine is off a little. You hope that's not. I mean, I do because they're in our division, but it's nothing.
I mean, the other thing is things turn around real quick in the NFL yeah. too. So, you know, like you make a couple good moves to shore up the O-line. You know, maybe make a trade for a wide receiver.
You use your pick at the top of the first round.
So we'll see. But for right now, it's grim. Feel for the kid.
Yeah. I mean, his best receiver is Adam Thielen, who is...
like our age. Like
35. Yeah. You know, Adam Thielen is like getting his wages garnished for Medicare.
I got a question about the Saints, though. I have never seen a fan base boo in stranger ways. Like, I think there were, four different times during that game where either me or Jonathan Vilma, who was doing color commentary, said out loud, "Why are they booing?" Like, there was fourth and one, and the kiddies, the Panthers, get drawn off sides in an obvious, obvious dummy, and that drive starts to peter out, and they end up booing the Saints on a totally reasonable play call. I can't remember the specific play call, but it was very obvious, and it's just like, I don't, like why are y'all, you're not supposed to boo just because they didn't get the first down. You're supposed to boo because they did something wrong or you know, like a bonehead move, right? And, like, every time they booed, I'm like, why are you booing? I don't get it. So is that, like, a thing? Like, I didn't realize that was a thing with the Saints.
I got to look. I got to see what the play was on third down where they blew it.
We have, like, Carr and Dennis Allen have, like, lost the city. They lost the dome. Like, people have very little patience with them. So whatever it was, it might be something like that is like a constant nagging thing that they, you'd have to find out what it was. But I know like the smallest thing now, people are just booing Derek Carr and Dennis Allen for. Cause they are really on everybody's last nerve. They seem like con men. I know I say this every week, but like they have pretty much, scammed the city and are Gail Benson, or whatever, the Saints, out of a ton of money, and they're not good, and they don't plan on addressing any of their issues. So every time, like, whatever you saw probably kept happening over and over, and there's probably, we know that's a play that doesn't work or something like that. Like, they'll constantly run plays that, like a fade, you know, like, that never works for, like, the percentage is, like, so low. And if we throw that or something on, like, third and one and it's incomplete, like, we're just going to boo. It could have been something like that, okay. But yeah.
You found it? I just looked it up. So here is the sequence, right? They get Shy Tuttle, who, you know, and I can't hate Shy Tuttle. He was like an undrafted free agent who made the team here and like played well enough to get like a, you know, free agent contract.
Can't hate him, but let's say, I mean, that was the most obvious. We are just going to draw you offside. We're not actually snapping the ball.
Total boneheaded play. I'm reasonably sure that Eric McCoy slipped him a 20. So
that's all it would take.
That said, here is the three play sequence that led to the booing. Pass short left to Bowden for 2 yards. Then I remember this pass. It was a screen to Kamara for -6.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh.
And I remember that play because Carr was in trouble and there was no blocking anywhere near Kamara.
Yeah.
And it's like, who sets up your check down outlet 6 yards behind the line? Just drop it, Alvin. Throw it at his feet, Derek. What are you doing? Right? So they lose 6 yards on that play. The next play was the deep shot to Olave when he had Horn beat by a step and a half. And the ball was underthrown just enough to let Horn catch up and make a great play, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. Play, yeah.
Getting his hand on the ball. And so that, I think people are just tired of like Carr not hitting the shots that were open. Though it really was not, it wasn't an abysmal pass. You know, I mean, you're throwing it like 50 yards in the air.
I'm remembering that play now. And absolute textbook, like turned at the last possible second. His body was in perfect position.
Yep.
His hands were exactly where they were supposed to be. Like, that is an NFL cornerback doing what he's paid to do as well as he possibly can. And if that's the thing, you know, after, yeah, okay, fair enough, like, get after him for not throwing it into his feet on a check down or a screen on second and you know, pretty long. But if you're booing your quarterback because the cornerback made a textbook perfect defensive play,
yeah,
that's weird to me. I don't know. Like, we'd be booing every play up in Carolina.
No, I mean, that's totally reasonable, right? That's totally reasonable if you think about it being in a vacuum. But that was also the first drive coming out of the third quarter when, you know, we feel like we should be blowing out this team. And we kind of hate Carr already.
Yeah.
So he's, like, not getting a lot of generous interpretation of anything. Like, by the same token, we missed the first field goal from 29 yards. And, you know, on the replay, it really looks like the holder did a horrible job of, like, putting the ball in position, spinning the laces. And it made Groupie kind of step funny on his approach because he wasn't sure that the ball was going to be downright. Doesn't matter. Groupie's taking shit for that because he keeps missing.
You know what? When they went through that, the laces in the wrong spot, all I could think of was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, laces out, laces out.
Yes. Yep. Yes. That's exactly right. And I did think the exact same thing. And, you know, the same comment was made, you know, Stephanie made the same comment back when he missed a kick against the Texans. And she's like, don't you understand that really basic stuff?
The guy that was the holder when I was my senior year was a walk-on who was not a kicker or a quarterback. Usually, like, you're doing either quarterback or backup kicker, punter type thing or whatever. This guy was a walk-on, like, safety. And he just found a niche. And, like, he would go and hold for the long snappers and for the kickers whenever they wanted to kick some balls. Like, whenever. His whole all the way through. And he got so good and just because he was doing that all the time. And they were so used to using him that they just said, hey, let him hold for us because we know he knows what he's doing. And, which is a good example of how football is really unique in how specific the niches you can find are. You know, it's such a regimented game, so specialized.
I mean, we have a guy who only plays long snapper.
Yeah.
You know, Zach Woods, 10 snaps, and it's all kicks.
Oh, yeah.
And you know they're good at it because I don't even know their names. So, like, if you don't know their names, they're doing the right. You should never know their names, yeah.
This was a weird one to watch, you know. If it weren't for the blocked punt, and they can call it whatever they want to call it, I guess, you know, Sewell knocked it down
before. He picked it out of the air before the foot got on it.
So they call it a fumble and a loss.
Thanks, league office. Like, y'all are killing it out there. We really appreciate that.
But, like, if it weren't for that, we actually go into the half only up 7-3, which is another reason why I think Derek Carr took a lot of shit for getting booed at the start of the third quarter. You know, we're winning by 11, but it's not you. Our defense has as many points as you do.
Also lowest passing yardage in the season, you know, so far in the first half. 56 yards between the two teams. It's one thing when you've got a rookie quarterback on a very bad team doing that. It's another one. There's, like, an actual possibility of the playoffs. You're trying to throw that. So I hear you on that stuff. Yeah. I just it was funny, like, on the broadcast, it was like, like, I hear there being frustration or whatever, but it's just so funny the specific places they chose to are just places where even if I was pissed off and frustrated, I would not be booing because it's like,
Yeah, like, I think the city's just chomping at the bit to, like, get Derek Carr shit because they just do not like him as a man at this point.
Derek Carr and Dennis Allen and our offensive coordinator, Pete Carmichael, like, you know, there's a real... there's a real kind of catch me outside kind of vibe to this whole thing. And so it doesn't surprise me anymore when they boo, even in a game that they're winning by 3 touchdowns, because they're just like, you know, I've
whereas our coaching staff is less catch me outside and more, I'm just here so I don't get fined. I mean, our special teams coordinator is our interim head coach and we're giving up a blocked punt. Are you kidding me? Like, what are we doing? You know, the first play of the game, the kick return, and this is a small thing. This is the sort of thing that, like, if you didn't play football, you know, decently high level, you might not even notice, but in 20s on a kickoff are a big deal. Like, special team coaches love in 20s. Yeah. If you can tackle a guy inside the 20-yard line, you are doing something right. And literally the first play of the game, we're getting tackled on, I think, the 14 or 16-yard line. The guy, you know, the return man just blows a tire, and he's swarmed by three guys. It's like, dude, this ain't going to be fun.
Yeah. That's like one of those hidden indicators, one of those early signs. Like last week when we gave up a first down by just letting someone run it, like taking a full start and then running it up the gut at us three times to get the first down. I was like, ah, what the fuck?
There's like a mentality type play.
What did they
do? Like, you know, and sometimes it's small stuff and sometimes it's big stuff, but, you know, there's certain plays that really stand out. And I just, you know, when the first play of the game is an in 20, you're in a hole psychologically that you don't want to be in, both as a coaching staff and as, you know, players. So,
yeah,
you know, but at least the Bears will get a real nice pick this year. So congrats to the great city of Chicago at the other end of the Mississippi.
They'll mess it up.
But who knows? Maybe they're just going to stick with Tycho Brahe. Tyson Bagent.
Tyson Bagent, yeah.
You know, the one other thing I wanted to point out is at one point we cut to Taysom Hill on the sidelines with a bottle of sunflower seeds. And all I can say is we used to be a country. We used to be a proper country where that would have been Copenhagen. And now it's spits. And Taysom Hill, you should be ashamed, son. You should be ashamed for that move.
I thought it was dip at first, and I was like, same. I can't believe.
Nah, he's Mormon.
Taysom Hill is on the sideline dipping.
Yeah.
And then I saw, like there was something about it where it was like a video game where the gravity seems off, you know? And I was like, that's not dip. That's not liquid. He's got like a fistful of sunflower seeds. Or a mouthful of, you know, cheek full of sunflower seeds, and he's just...
That ain't snuff in Joe Brandon's America, man.
He's just as wholesome.
Yeah.
He is just as wholesome as you expect a BYU quarterback to be. Yeah. But yes, I definitely understand that.
Between that clip and how many short yardage situations we ran from the shotgun, and then I thought we were doing it because... Bryce Young just couldn't drop back under center because he didn't play in college or whatever. Like, that was in my head what was going on. But then we ran play action from under center on, like, the 2-yard line and managed to get sacked and give up a bunch of yards. So between all the runs on short yardage out of the shotgun and that clip, I just, you know, we need to outlaw the forward pass. We need to go back to how football used to be. And make this the pure sport of men that it should be. And we used to be a proper country, and we could be again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I have to give this week's update on where in the world is Trevor Penning. Trevor Penning is our 2022 first round draft pick who missed all of 2022. And spent the first month of the season playing himself out of the rotation. He got 2 snaps at tackle and 5 snaps on special teams. So once again, he is in for fewer plays than our long snapper.
Great.
I still feel like that's a lot for him. He's coming back. This is like his...
Two is the most snaps not on special teams that he's had in like a month.
He's so working good his for way him. Back.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You know, they gave McCoy and Ramchick 2 plays off each, and Landon Young was usually the guy. What is the other big deal from this week? Is the Make-A-Wish. You know, fountain of youth of Jimmy Graham
incredible.
Coming back and catching
That felt so good.
Another touchdown pass. And then
I think that pass in the seam, that one he caught in the seam, not to set up the touchdown, was actually better than the touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that was.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was old Jimmy.
I mean, yeah, Jimmy is old. I think that's the bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. <that's>, yeah.
He faked a spike. Not a spike, a slam dunk over the crossbar. He feel like, because, you know, that's a 15-yard penalty now. And also, I don't know that he really wants to try to do that jump again. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have his college hoops hops probably anymore. He'd probably kill me if I say that to his face. But be that as it may, he's nowhere near me. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
And it begs the question, though, because I think he's caught, like, three passes all year, two of them for touchdowns, and one of them is that other. Like, why are we using him more? Why are we using, you know, Foster Moreau, who's another scam artist, too, by the way. He was with that Dennis Allen, Derek Carr. He came with, they all came together from the Raiders here.
Yeah.
They're like a triumvirate of thievery. They're like, why are we...
Though I think Moreau was expected to just be like a blocking back.
Oh, okay.
So I don't mind it as much. But he's playing a lot on special teams too. And he played more downs than anyone at tight end this week. Because he got, you know, we weren't passing much. So he was just in blocking on all the running plays.
Yeah.
But we really are dipping down. Like, A.T. Perry, finally, he hit in stride. So he got one good deep ball. But he played like 32 downs. These are our wide receivers. I want you to tell me if you've heard of any of these guys, George. A.T. Perry, he's a maybe because I think he played at Clemson. So you may have heard his name in passing in the Carolinas. Keith Kirkwood, 23. We have Callaway getting 4 snaps. And then Bowden has 40 snaps and Olave has 34. So, but that's because they also use Bowden to block on running plays and stuff. So, but it's like, it's all weird. It's all very weird. I do think that our defensive secondary played fantastically though. Like,
yeah.
Adebo and Alante Taylor both had very good games, except when Thielen got loose a little at the end. Yotam continues to look great.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to, like, actually play his way into, like, an insane contract if he gets squeezed out when Lattimore comes back. Yeah. But they just look good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, that was the thing. Even though it was against the Panthers, it felt good to watch the secondary just knocking balls away and clamping down.
Well, that's our strength. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Though the run defense has completely collapsed in the second half of the season. So I'm not exactly sure.
I gotta say,
that bodes for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that Miles Sanders run was beautiful. That long one that he ripped off, that was like, that was one of my favorite plays. I mean, I know it was the pan. I was still rooting for it. Like, I was like, that was a beautiful.
Yeah, made two guys miss, get to the second level, and then
it was. Just he go. Kept cutting back, and then just really following his blocks and breaking ankles, and everything about it was like really nice. And then even in all of that, Adebo makes an incredible play, basically saves running it from the opposite side of the field to knock him out of bounds before the
end. That's what set up the play I mentioned earlier, where we're under center and running a play action on I think we ran one run play and it didn't really, maybe lost a yard or two, so we're inside the five certainly. And we're running this weird, I think we had one tight end and one running back on the field, maybe two tight ends, one running back, something like a 21 personnel, something like that. And we're under center and we're running play action. All we've done all game is run shotgun type runs. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. That was the first time I felt like, oh, we're going to win this. We might win this.
I mean, I will say that wasn't my feeling. I felt pretty confident. I felt pretty confident that we'd win.
Not me.
Because I did not think that Carolina had much. But it was the first time I was like, we can't blow this.
There's lots of season left to do that against quality opposition.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. God, yeah.
We do. I mean, here's... I don't know who the Panthers close with, but we close with Atlanta and Tampa, two super critical division games. The Rams, who were 6-7, and the Giants now. And if we lose to Tommy Cutlets, I'm going to lose my mind.
We've got Falcons, Packers, at the Jaguars, and the Bucks. So three home games. So we, you know, plausibly could play spoiler in the NFC South and actually win a couple games because three or four at home and none of these teams are, they're all 6-7 because it's the NFC. In any event, I'm glad that we could provide some succor to the good people in New Orleans this weekend because there ain't much flowing around the Charlotte Metroplex these days. Yeah. It's okay though. We got a new gaffer for the soccer team, and so that's what we're gonna focus on. Not the rap sheets of the Hornets or the dismal, abysmal, hilariously bad record of the football team.
Soccer team.
Sorry.
You got a new what for the soccer?
Gaffer, team? Manager, coach.
Oh. Yeah.
Which is actually funny. His name's Dean Smith. Which, when you think North Carolina, Dean Smith.
No,
what? Swear Dean to God. Smith?
We hired Dean Smith to coach a soccer team.
That's really funny. There's a lot of passing around the perimeter.
Yeah. We stick players in all, in each corner of the field. What do you call it? There's how many corners is it? One, two, three, four corners. Soccer. Yeah, you know, okay. I can see the Ted Lasso script right here, right?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. But you can't call him a gaffer, man. Don't Europeanize American soccer culture.
I mean, it's already pretty Europeanized. He is British. We hired him out of the...
That's fine. You can hire a British guy. But, I still don't want to hear people referring it to, as a pitch in an American
accent. Can I call them kits instead of jerseys, or is that not allowed either?
You can call them
kits. Well, that's just as European as pitch.
Yeah, I know.
Where are we drawing the line here, man?
It feels...
Where are we drawing the line here?
I don't know. Arbitrary.
Okay, I promise I won't call it footy scran when I get a hot dog at the game.
Yes, you may not. I had to stop following that account. I just was like, this is too disgusting.
I used to do a thread on Twitter when I was still on Twitter, being just quote tweeting weird stuff people in the UK were eating and saying, I'm very worried about what's going on in the UK. And it was, they made a beer, a prawn cocktail beer. A shrimp cocktail beer.
That's gross. Now, a friend of mine got people really mad because he commented on one footy scran thing where it was like a sausage and a roll, just like a dinner roll. Like they weren't the same shape. It was like a sausage with a side of bread, which just offends the sandwich sensibilities of North America.
Right.
And so he made some kind of crack like that, and he's just, filled with people with umlauts in their names yelling at him about how what a savage he was because he didn't understand the independence of the sausage and the bread, And it's like you're sitting with food on your lap. You want the bread to hold the grease to you, man. What do you mean I'm the savage? What do you want, macaroni and cheese without a spoon? Child. Mm. The Earl got one thing right, and that's you put the gross stuff in between bread.
Right.
Yeah. So you don't have to wipe it on your pantaloons.
Speaking of which, I haven't had a muffaletta in a long time. I need to rectify. I need to find a place to get a muffaletta because now that I've been thinking about New Orleans for an hour and a half, good Lord.
Yeah. We may do that on the trip. Trip update for City, St. Country, St. listeners. Ron picked up the tickets. And so we will be in section 144.
Yes.
We are going to be at the back of section 144. So hunt us down, but you're not allowed to take a picture of Ron.
No, I'm anonymous. Yeah. And I guarantee you they got good muffalatas in the dome. Because, like, at the lower section, okay. It's crazy how, like, how good the food is in the 100s. It's like you got, like, a guy standing over a big cut of meat holding a knife, and he's just cutting for you. And you go up the line, and it's like, and by the top, it's just like some knockoff version of Taco Bell or something. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? You know, it's like, it gets progressively worse. Yeah. But it's still expensive as shit, even way up there. Because we used to sit way up there. Yeah. Back in the day, and I remember I used to get like a Quiznos value meal, and then for like $13. And by the time it was in, I was getting like a little bitty bowl of jambalaya for like $15. And a drink they would have to make you. It was, and then they take the top. They do that where y'all at in North Carolina, or even where when you go to the games, Charles. They take the top off the drink so you can't throw it on the field.
Yeah, they make us, so okay, my season tickets are in the club section. You couldn't get a beer onto the field from where my seats are. But when I sit in the supporter section, you better believe they make you pour every beer into a plastic cup, because people toss that stuff like crazy for soccer games. For NFL games, I would be surprised if they let beer cans into the lower bowl.
I started I buy like a 20-ounce Coke, and they'd take the top off. So I start, and I didn't like that because I don't like walking around with an empty top. You know, and I like to put the thing in my, like, put the 20-ounce bottle in my pocket. So I would sneak in a 20-ounce Coke bottle top to the game, and then she would toss hers, and I would put mine right on. I'd be like...
That's the right attitude. I got really mad when I was at Barclays, and, you know, I was getting, like, you know, beers for me and my wife or something, and they didn't have, like, plastic top. Like, they poured the beer... Yeah. And then they wouldn't give you a plastic top. And I'm like, all right, that's bullshit now. Yeah. Like, I need to have this thing slosh around on someone else who paid, you know, $100 for tickets to this game.
You got
to
sneak them in.
Ron, any final thoughts?
Try to look. The only thing I remember I did want to touch on is this. I kind of, one last thing. I noticed that, like, cars, like, yard per attempt was, like, 4.5, I want to say, and like Alvin Kamara's yards per carry was 4.7, so we would have been better off just running Kamara. Even he's basically like every time Carr drops back to pass, it's like Jamal Williams running the ball, except there's more of a chance there's going to be a turnover. It's like, I don't think we need Derek Carr anymore. Like, this is my one more case for, let's get rid of Derek Carr now. Let's let Jameis Winston do his thing, and that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. I guess my final game thought is the beast that reared its ugly head again this week is that despite all of Young's troubles, three times we let him sneak out and run for a first down when the coverage was good, because we are still not closing the deal on too many sacks. You know, we did get a bunch. We actually did have 4 sacks this week. I probably should complain a little less. But we, 3 times, he like slipped right up the gut because the offensive line was able to push our guys back and around the pocket. Mm-hmm. And he was able to just sort of run free with nothing but space in front of him. And so that just kind of... chapped my drawers once again. Yeah. Final thoughts on the game from you, George?
I really don't ever want to see someone run in short yardage out of the shotgun again. That would make me very happy, both as a Panthers fan and just as somebody who's experienced the game of football most of my life. Let's not do that anymore.
Yeah. Sounds good. On Blue Sky, you're...
At Perks, at PEARKES dot BSky dot social, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Just your last name. Do you have anything coming up, a white paper or any some such thing being released for public consumption?
No, I just check me out on Blue Sky. I post stuff about my work there, and yeah, follow me there if you like my takes. They're not usually this good.
All right. All right, sounds good. As we come to the end of the episode, what that means is it is time for the outro horns. In the wake of a victory and our return to, I didn't even mention this before, first place in the NFL South, NFC South, even though we are losing every conceivable tiebreaker. Oh, as we speak, we get the Happy Horns to go out with. So here we go with the Happy Horns, if everyone is ready. Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1. Thank you everyone for listening to City Saint and Country Saint. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say this. Share it, tell a friend, promote it, do whatever if you like what we're doing. We'll be back for a second season anyway, but you know. Like and subscribe, I guess, is what you're supposed to say. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, L. Ron Mexico, our guest, George Perks. You can find him on Blue Sky, and to Lunar Snow, who will eventually get all of the echo out of my voice. Thanks, folks. We will see you next week.
Hooray. Hooray.